Hello, and welcome to the Chest Journal Podcast, where each month we host a discussion with the authors of important articles from the current issue of the journal, adding context and commentary to the challenges facing clinicians in the fields of pulmonary, critical care, and sleep medicine. To introduce today's topic, here's your host, Dr. Dominique Pepper.
On behalf of CHEST, I'd like to welcome you to this month's CHEST podcast. My name is Dominique Pepper, and I'm the host of the CHEST podcast section. Thank you all for joining us today for what will be a really informative discussion on the outcomes for lung metastases-directed therapy. Today, we have three guests who are all authors on this CHEST publication entitled Sublobar Resection, Stereotactic Body Radiation Therapy, and Percutaneous Ablation Provide Comparable Outcomes for Lung Metastasis-Directed Therapy. So I'll ask our authors to introduce themselves. Janani?
Hello, everyone. My name is Janani Reisenauer. I'm a thoracic surgeon at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. And Patrick?
Hi, I'm Patrick Eichen. I'm a radiologist here in Rochester, Minnesota, working in chest radiology in the interventional oncology section.
Perfect. And Dawn?
I'm Dawn Owen. I'm a radiation oncologist who specializes in thoracic radiation.
It's a pleasure to have all three of you. This is a really exciting paper, and we'll ask Dr. Owen to kick us off. So for the benefit of our audience, what is MDT and what therapeutic options exist for it?
So MDT is metastasis-directed therapy. Basically, it's giving definitive treatments to kill, ablate, resect lung metastases. And the therapeutic options are to resect, which Dr. Reisenauer would do, to ablate, which is what Dr. Eichen would do, where they put in a needle and they freeze or burn the lesion, or to use stereotactic body radiation, which is a high-dose radiation, very focused in on the lesion with the intent also of ablating that lesion. Often we have a multidisciplinary discussion about this, and we discuss with patients the pros and cons or the benefits and risks of each. Certainly with the surgical and interventional radiology options, these are more invasive options, but they provide really excellent local control. And for radiation, it's a non-invasive option. And we discuss in our paper the differences in the patient populations, and we performed a propensity matched analysis to look at the outcomes so that we can be more judicious about how we select patients.
Great. That's a great introduction. So I'll turn to Dr. Reisenauer. Why did you perform the study? Why did you want to compare these three modalities of therapy?
Thank you. That's a great question. I think as emerging alternative treatments to conventional thoracic surgery for lung lesions progress, there's oftentimes questions that are raised regarding minimally invasiveness of each procedure, but then also efficacy. Historically, there's always been a convention that surgery was better than either SBRT or ablation. And although that might be true for primary lung cancer, the best surgical outcomes papers that we have looking at large volume metastasectomies don't directly compare head-to-head these modalities to each other. And in the advent of chemotherapy and immunotherapy and targeted therapy for metastatic lesions to the chest, it's a subject that's of much debate and controversy with little scientific data to really understand how do these targeted treatments compare head to head. And our goal was to really understand, are there specific subsets of patients, populations, or nodules where one treatment modality was perhaps preferential over the other? And is there any scientific data to corroborate that?
Great. So a lot of controversy on what the right therapy is, and you all decided to leverage your experience and your data. So Dr. Eichen, maybe you could share with us what the study methods were. How did you conduct the study? And how did it address any limitations, if there were any previous studies on this topic?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's complex to look at because it's hard to do it in a prospective manner. Obviously, this was a retrospective study looking at kind of as Dawn and Jenny have alluded to, what we've kind of been doing for years, which is look at these patients collectively and decide which modality we're going to use for which lesion, and often, you know, multiple modalities on the same patient. So looking back at our retrospective data and then try to control for some of those outliers and patient selection by doing the propensity matching to try to come up with a more comparable retrospective comparison. And then just looking at our survival and our local recurrence on a per lesion basis for those three modalities and comparing the three. I think in terms of controlling for the any of the problems, it's the propensity matching that really helps control for some of the differences in patient selection.
And to get a sense of the flavor of what kind of patients you included and excluded, maybe you could describe your inclusion criteria, your exclusion criteria. And then one component that we may be missing here is, were these patients receiving any baseline chemotherapy or other immunotherapies in addition to other therapies that you'll outline in your therapeutic strategy? Dr. Eichen?
So in terms of inclusion, exclusion, we excluded, you know, primary lung cancers was the primary exclusion criterion. In terms of other therapies, it wasn't an exclusion criterion to be on chemotherapy, immunotherapy, but the vast majority of the patients, if I'm remembering correctly, had not had any systemic therapy within the month prior. So they may have had it before that, and they may have gotten it after that, but within the month of the local therapy, they had not were not on systemic therapy at the time. Dawn or Jenny, can you help me out there and refresh my memory on the specifics there?
So there was actually there was a difference in terms of, you know, whether they were surgical or ablation candidates. Many, many more patients did receive systemic therapy around the time of stereotactic body radiation. We often can't interdigitate this treatment. This was, you know, our study was by far one of the largest propensity weighted analyses, and we were very inclusive. Basically, anyone who had a lung metastasis were treated with definitive treatment, which would have been any one of these modalities, was included. We did collect who received systemic therapy, and overall, that was the one thing that stood out in terms of systemic therapy. That was the difference, was that many of the patients receiving stereotactic body radiation were on systemic therapy around the time of their treatment, whereas for the surgical patients and the ablation patients, fewer of them were.
Gotcha. And then how do you go about, so you obviously have a multidisciplinary team that meets and discusses these patients. And obviously with all the disciplines, the surgical discipline, the interventional radiology, the radiation oncology, how do you all go about saying, you know, what criteria push you in one direction versus the other direction for sublobar resection versus SBRT versus ablation? I'll put that to Dawn and then Dr. Reisenhauer.
So we actually do discuss many of these patients. Certainly patients who have a few lesions, it's oligometastatic, they have very good performance status. And within our data set, we showed that patients who had a very good performance status often and fewer lesions often went to ablation and surgery over an SBRT group, which were often patients who had slightly poor performance status, were on systemic therapy. It was difficult to also break. And then also the lung function of patients were poorer in a cohort who received SBRT, and hence we needed that propensity matched analysis. So usually when we have a patient, it's presented to all of us. We have a discussion amongst our interventional radiology colleagues and our thoracic surgery colleagues and radiation colleagues. And we actually look at the location of the lesion. We look at the number of lesions. We look at whether the patient has well-controlled intrathoracic and extrathoracic disease. We also look at the age, lung function. All of this is taken in a very individualized manner and individualized treatment. And in many cases, patients can have multiple modalities. There are cases where we will resect a few, we will ablate, and then we will radiate lesions that may be more difficult for either one of those modalities in highly selected patients. Most of these patients had multimodality treatment, either asynchronously or synchronously.
Great. And then Dr. Reisenhauer, I think we're heading towards the results here. So maybe you could share with us what your key findings were and how you interpreted them, and then we'll pull in Dr. Owen and Dr. Eichen.
I think the takeaway, there were three main takeaways that I would encourage the readership to take home from the results of this project. One, I think, is somewhat intuitive, which is, to some degree, the smaller the lesions, the better the recurrence rates. And in general, that was around a centimeter. And anything larger than that tended to have a shorter recurrence-free interval, as opposed to those that were larger. And I think that that's somewhat intuitive. The second finding, I think, which was also to some degree intuitive as we extrapolate from the primary lung cancer literature, is that this was a retrospective study, and we'll address that later on. But it, so patients naturally, to some degree, selected themselves towards SBRT, stereotactic body radiation, if they were sicker individuals. And that did emerge in our review as well, especially as we sought to propensity match. But I think the third and most important finding that relates to prospective lessons as we seek to incorporate these lessons into clinical practice is that in terms of oncologic efficacy, there really was no major difference between all three treatment modalities. And that is a challenge to conventional thinking, because many people out there do believe that surgery is superior to other treatment modalities, even in the metastatic setting. And I think that this literature shows that that's not necessarily true. Now, we didn't necessarily divide this up by histologic subtype, which we know from other metastasectomy series, histologic subtype makes a lot of difference as well. But by and large, I think the results of this paper make us all very comfortable moving forward, recommending either SBRT or ablation or surgery for this patient, not feeling like we're recommending one inferior approach over the other, and really focusing on lung function, number of nodules, nodule size, and nodule location.
That's pretty informative, and I'll pull in Dr. Eichen now. So one question that someone might have is, you guys, obviously, this is a retrospective analysis. You kind of selected which patients would go for which therapy, and maybe that's the reason why we've seen no difference in survival and toxicity. How would you respond to that, Dr. Eichen? And what were the key findings that you noted?
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to note, and that we did decide which patients would go to which therapy. And I think there are, certainly ramifications of that. So certainly, just from the ablation standpoint, I'm not going to be as good at treating lesions that are in the central lung, whereas we think that SBRT should be fine. And I think that shows up in the data. We treated more central lesions with SBRT and more peripheral lesions with ablation, but that's just the right tool for the right job. So I think you can look at that as a limitation. You can also look at it as a confirmation that the way we select and route these patients is appropriate and gets them to the right modality. I would agree with what Jenny had said in terms of the main takeaways. I think we've shown that we can do a good job with treating these metastases, whatever tool that we choose, and just choosing the right tool for the right lesion it does work. What we have been doing, then the thing that instinctively and intuitively we decided to route these patients does work for them.
Gotcha. And then I'll pull in Dr. Owen here. Someone might ask the question of, so you were able to do a propensity score adjustment. Do we need to have a randomized clinical trial where we may be looking at more peripheral or middle lesions to separate which ones are best indicated? Do you think that's indicated, or should we continue with best practice or best assessment by a clinician? Dr. Owen?
I think it's very difficult to run a randomized trial amongst different modalities. In a non-small cell setting, we tried that. There were two randomized trials that failed to accrue. And partly that was because there were multiple options, and patients also come in with their own expectations and biases about what modality they prefer. I do think that it's also very difficult to run a randomized trial that's going to capture everybody. If we're going to look at all small peripheral lesions, I think even we also reported our individual outcomes for each of the modalities. They're all comparable in terms of local control, and all of them had very, very excellent and low risk of toxicity. So I think that while ideally a randomized phase 3 trial, 3 arms would be the best, and we always want level 1 evidence, I think it would be very difficult given that many patients will come in with their own thoughts. And the other difficult thing is with central lesions, often they would require lobectomy or they're much more difficult to treat with ablation. And when we look at the patient individually, it may be safer to give them radiation. So I think that it would be very difficult, although ideal.
And then, Dr. Eichen remarked on the fact that, you know, certain patients are better indicated for certain therapies. So maybe I can ask each of you in your own specialty, which patients do you think are best suited for your modality? So maybe we'll start with Dr. Owen, then Dr. Eichen, and then Dr. Reisenhauer. Of the patients that you assessed here, based on your findings, which patient should we definitely send for SBRT, for ablation, and then surgery? Dr. Owen?
I have a discussion with this with patients on a daily basis. Basically, patients who have first onset of lung metastases, excellent lung function, are fit for surgery or ablation, I actually will shepherd them more towards those modalities. And patients who are not as fit, whose lung function is borderline, or if there's an ultracentral lesion, meaning abutting the heart, abutting the bronchus, something that would be very difficult for my colleagues to treat, then I do tend to recommend stereotactic radiation. However, I don't recommend things in a vacuum. Anybody who comes across our desk where there isn't a very obvious bifurcation of performance status and lung function, we actually discuss in a multidisciplinary manner. Sometimes it's a matter of whether the patient's had multiple surgeries and it may be difficult to do a re-resection. If there is a risk of complications from ablation because the patient is on anticoagulation, and also having the patient autonomy into the picture with their participation in decision making is important as well.
Great. Dr. Eichen?
So for ablation, it's we are going to be best for lesions less than 2 centimeters, and even as Dr. Reisenhauer said, even better for lesions less than 1 centimeter. Probably if it's 3 centimeters or larger, ablation is probably not going to be a good choice, or recurrence rate is going to be too high. In terms of location, the central third of the lung, so right around the hilum, gets difficult due to the amount of hot structures there that are going to limit our ability to achieve sufficient cold to kill a tumor. In terms of number of lesions, I think one of the strengths of ablation is its repeatability and its limited impact on overall lung function. We destroy a pretty limited amount of normal lung. So if you anticipate you have a lot of lesions or you anticipate a repeated need for treatment in the future, that's another reason to consider ablation.
Great. And Dr. Reisenhauer, I'll pull you in here because we have the benefit of you being both a thoracic surgeon and interventional pulmonologist. So maybe you could comment on sublobar resection. And then to put you on the spot, what are your thoughts on bronchoscopic ablation?
I knew there'd have to be a controversial question in here somewhere. So let me comment first on those ideal locations or those ideal nodules for surgical consideration. So I think if in particular a diagnosis is warranted at the time of treatment, for example, suspected metastatic disease but not proven, and particularly if there's a role for potential need for molecular markers to guide systemic therapy, that's where I think surgery really is still in some ways should be considered. I think if there are relatively few lesions that can be addressed in a single surgical setting with minimal compromise to lung function, meaning a wedge resection or maybe a segmentectomy, but relatively less trauma to lung function and preservation of parenchyma, those are kind of the ideal candidates. And obviously, few nodules. I don't have a hard and fast number because, again, it depends on their size and their location. But if you think you can get away with a therapeutic benefit with just a few lesions. I will point out, though, and this comment was made earlier, that many of these patients don't get singular modal treatment. Many of these patients that we see sometimes end up getting one treatment combined with another treatment based upon where these various nodules are. And that's very, very, very individualized. And it is based on patient's age, comorbidities, pulmonary function, disease-free interval, number of nodules, and location of nodules. But it is not uncommon for us to consider multimodal treatment even for the same patient and use a combination of modalities. In terms of my opinion on bronchoscopic ablation, it is a field that is rapidly emerging, and perhaps where it would make its biggest, broadest splash is in the metastatic setting, because that's where we now have data that shows that ablation versus SBRT versus surgery is somewhat equivocal for oncologic efficacy. I'm not sure that that has been proven to be the case for primary lung cancer. And so I think if we're exploring a new technology, we have to implement it in an area where we know from an oncologic standpoint it's equivalent, and that would be in the metastatic realm. So I think stay tuned. There's a lot of trials and data and literature to come, but it certainly marks for a prime opportunity for a clinical trial study.
Great. Well, definitely be looking for that. And I think one take-home message I'm getting from all three of you is the importance of collaboration amongst these specialties. Let's jump into the key limitations, because no study is perfect, and we want to make sure that our listeners are aware of any shortcomings or limitations of the study, so that either when they're reading the paper, they can bear that in mind when applying the insights to their patients, or if they're conducting future studies. So let's start with Dr. Reisenhauer, and then Dr. Eichen and Dr. Owen.
Sure. So some of these we've alluded through throughout this conversation, but obviously anytime a study is retrospective, it is subject to selection bias. And like Dr. Eichen said, I do view this study as somewhat of a confirmation that our clinical intuition was accurate, meaning we were referring patients to the right treatment modalities, but that retrospective nature is certainly a limitation to this study. We did not subdivide based upon histologic subtype. I think although that would make for cleaner recurrence-free data, it would make the study very difficult to perform, because now you're propensity matching based on histologic subtype and treatment modality and lesion size and comorbidities. It would be a very difficult thing to do. But certainly agree that's an aspect of limitation. And then the third you alluded to already is that certain patients were across various phases of care, meaning some had, you know, chemotherapy already on board, some were in the midst of it, and some were awaiting therapy. And so that can play into some of the comparators as well. Obviously, the study is subject to selection bias. Patient underwent the treatment algorithms that were selected by their treating physicians. Yes, we overcome that by having a multidisciplinary conversations by all, but it's not a blinded study. So I would say that that's an additional limitation as well.
Great. Dr. Eichen?
Yeah, I guess I would echo that. Heterogeneity in histology, patient population slightly. And then, you know, honestly, we're comparing three things that have different, they're very different. So surgery, ablation, and SBRT have different complications, different, recovery profile. So like comparing the complications is difficult. What do you call a complication compared to from SBRT compared to ablation? How do those compare to one another? So that's just another minor difference. The modalities are sufficiently different that it's hard to compare them directly all the time.
Dr. Owen, maybe you could comment on that, because in your paper you noted that it was difficult to evaluate local progression in SBRT. Maybe explain that to our audience, please.
So SBRT, as I explained to patients, does not get rid of, quote unquote, the lesion. It doesn't go away. Similar to ablation, it leaves behind a scar, and the scar may look very different than the original lesion. And so it's not uncommon that even at 3 months after they have stereotactic radiation, that we see a bloom of consolidation and inflammation in the lung on a CT chest, and in places where, if you're not familiar with the effect, some that could be misinterpreted as progression. At our center, we're very, very careful about that. We have great collaboration with our chest radiologist, Dr. Eichen being one of them, where we do evaluate that. And there are published atlases on how to evaluate response. And very often, there may be stability of the lesion in terms of size. And that would be, we counted stable disease as local control and absence of local progression. So it can be challenging after radiation, and in some cases, cryoablation as well, where your initial, Dr. Eichen can comment that your initial ice ball causes a slightly larger appearing area of consolidation in the where they've ablated as well. So whenever you have a modality where the lesion is not resected, where it's no longer absent, you have to look at the evolution of those radiographic changes after your treatment.
Great. And then as we wind towards the end of this podcast, I do want to get each of you to give your take-home messages from this paper. I'll start with Dr. Ike and then go to Dr. Owen and Dr. Reisenhauer. And then I just want to say I was really impressed with, I think there's like 20 authors on this paper and obviously at the Mayo Clinic. So I really appreciate you collaborating with each other and really trying to answer a difficult question, but using your resources, your insights, and the data that you have. So thank you for doing that. Dr. Eichen?
I think the take home is to approach, as we've touched on multiple times here, to approach these patients in a multidisciplinary manner, to collaborate with your colleagues to figure out what modality is going to be the best for each individual patient in their specific situation, then which individual lesion, and then rest assured that once you choose that treatment route, that the modalities that you've chosen are going to be effective for those patients.
Dr. Owen?
I would echo that the goal of our paper in addition is showing that there's comparable outcomes in terms of local control and a very, very low complication rate for each modality is above all collaborative care that is always in the best interests of the patient. And I feel very fortunate that I have wonderful colleagues, as you saw, several authors who we regularly interact with on a daily basis to individualize a plan to the patient based on multiple clinical and oncologic factors. So I think that we are, if we practice in this manner, I hope that we can shepherd patients to the best modality for them when they have lung metastases.
I definitely agree. Dr. Reisenhauer, you have the final word.
Well, thanks again for a great session. I would echo the comments that were made prior to me and just add that as all of us who are providers and see and treat patients with this complex and challenging problem, it gives me great solace to know that it's not a one and done approach, that there are multiple reasonable, successful and safe therapeutic alternatives for a challenging problem. And hopefully this study will be the impetus for much more scientific exploration and discovery.
Yeah, we'll definitely be looking for that. And to our audience, a very big thank you to Drs. Eichen, Owen, and Reisenhauer for a really great conversation, really great collaboration, and a big thank you to our CHESS community for joining us. I'm Dominic Pepper, and this is a CHESS podcast.